Right, mic check.
Mic check.
Oh, it looks great.
Okay. Good.
Hey guys, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome, welcome. We're so excited. We have a special guest today, a missionary and former personal trainer, Uncle Ricky. And, you know, we call him Uncle Ricky because he is my husband's uncle. And Uncle Ricky, I've known you now for 9 years. You know, I remember the first day we met on our college campus. And Nick, I think you met Uncle Ricky shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
So long history between us, and we're so excited to have you on the show with us today.
Hallelujah. Thank you so much. You know, first things first, I want to bless, praise, and thank the Lord for the privilege and honor of being on your show. And much gratitude to you both for the kind invitation.
Thank you so much. We're so excited to have you on the show. You know, you have been someone that has been a really great role model for how you really maintain, I think, your health and your body, and how fitness and nutrition and health has been a priority for you for a while. So I'm just going to get us started with our first question, which is, tell us about you, first of all, and tell us about your background as it relates to fitness and how you started your fitness journey.
Well, my fitness journey started rather unconventional way. When I was younger, unfortunately, I was bullied as a kid.
Really?
Because I was very small. I remember freshman year of football in high school, I stood at about 4'11" tall. I probably weighed barely 90 pounds.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
But freshman year of high school?
Yes.
Oh my God.
I was very small. But the blessing, you know, is that I was very fast. And I was also a track star at the high school level. And so anyway, so the bullying part made me realize, okay, I need to put some size on my body. So that was the catalyst to get me into the gym. And then from there, because I was always involved in athletics, you know, both in high school and in college, I knew that obviously strength training was very important for building muscle, and then of course the cardio piece to be able to run. So that's kind of how my fitness journey began.
So follow up, through your sports conditioning, I guess you could say, were like the coaches the one talking about muscle building, and like how did you become aware of the importance of muscle?
Yes. Like, for example, in high school football, you know, we had sessions where we had to lift. You know, they back in the day, they called it lifting.
Yeah.
You know, today, we call it strength training.
Yeah.
But it was a requirement. And obviously, to be at peak performance in any athletic type event or any kind of sport that you're participating in, you need to be stronger and faster. And the only way that can be done is through building lean muscle.
Yeah. So how did your fitness lifestyle turn into a fitness career?
Okay, so when I attended Wittenberg University in Springfield, Ohio, as most freshmen are undecided regarding their major, I was playing football at the time. I actually only played 1 year. I realized the balance of playing football and then running track indoor and outdoor was just too much. It was causing issues with studies because it was challenging. And then I thought I was going to pursue a career in medicine. So at the time, I was taking biology classes, which were very difficult.
Yeah.
And of course, I started taking health classes. And then I realized, you know what? I have a passion for health. You know, I'm obviously involved in athletics. And I knew that, wow, you know, you need to be healthy to participate in athletics. So I ended up meeting with the advisor of the health and physical education department. And then realize, okay, I'm going to declare this my major and declare biology my minor. So I wanted to make sure that I accumulated enough credits that if I took the road of going to medical school, that I had all the prerequisites.
Smart.
Even though I didn't, because when I graduated, I still needed some chemistry classes, which I ended up getting at a community college later. But the long and short of it, I did an internship with an orthopedic surgeon my senior year. I actually got to witness an ACL repair in the operating room, which was pretty cool. So it was always centered around athletics, sports medicine, health. So that was always a passion that I had. I knew it was my calling. That's how it turned into a career, because it started at university. And then I'll segue into after I got out of school. I did take the prereqs for medical school. I did take the MCATs, medical college admission test, a couple times. Unfortunately, my scores were average. They weren't the best. But but I just, even when I took the courses for it, there was just something in my gut, which is where your spirit is. It's just like, this isn't your path. So a door of opportunity opened up with the Oak Ridge Institute for Science and Education, which is a two-year internship type program where they pay you a monthly stipend. And I did this, and this is all postgraduate, after I got out of Wittenberg, with the United States Army Center for Health Promotion and Preventive Medicine. So there's the key, health promotion. So I did this two-year internship. I was doing this under a full bird colonel in the Army. I was surrounded by Army officers every day. One was a major, two of them were majors. And I was involved with formulating health and wellness programs for the Army. And these programs were disseminated throughout the world to all the United States Army. So it was smoking tobacco cessation, health and fitness, nutrition, dental care, everything. And I had to put together this package. But in the midst of doing all that, I started learning more about, hey, you know, this isn't about treating the disease. This is about preventing it from coming, happening in the first place. So I realized my niche was health promotion. Promote health. Tell people, this is what you need to do so you're not missing work. This is what you need to do to stay healthy and have longevity. So I knew that that was my path. So after I finished that two-year internship, then I accumulated all these certifications from reputable organizations for health and fitness, American College of Sports Medicine, which we know is one of the top, National Strength and Conditioning Association are my two major certifications. And then from that, a door of opportunity opened for me to be a personal trainer for a high-end client that I ended up training him and his wife for 15 years. And that was how my career took off as far as being in the fitness industry.
Wow.
I have several comments. First of all, I love this conversation about health promotion. So the work that you did after graduating, it sounds like it was very well-rounded. It wasn't just fitness. It wasn't just nutrition. It wasn't just, you know, smoking cessation, or it was all, even dentistry. And I think that's so important when you're talking about like a healthy lifestyle. And I also love how, you know, we hear about a lot of fitness influencers or just health coaches that are maybe fixing a problem, but coming at it from the other end of health promotion and prevention of certain conditions and diseases, I think is so important and so like foundational to our podcast.
Yeah, I don't think I've actually ever heard that terminology till today.
Yeah.
Promotion. Like I've always heard prevention. Prevent this.
Health promotion.
But I like thinking of it from that angle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I love that. And I think it's fascinating that, you know, you had kind of this opportunity in a more, I guess, like public space working with the Army, but then you went private. Kind of wanting to go off of this conversation here. You clearly had experience with fitness through school, you know, through your own personal desires, but then through learning about it with sports. You're clearly very healthy now. How did you make this a lifestyle? So how did you, as Nick and I like to say, how did you keep the switch? You know, how did you nurture this to be something that was lifelong?
That's an excellent question. So hearkening back to the United States Army Center for Health Promotion and Preventive Medicine. So they have both promotion and prevention. And what I wanted to emphasize also, one of the other categories was stress management. So we know in the lifestyle, the fast-paced lifestyle, the world we're living in now, obviously it's not a safe world. Unfortunately, we know about the wars in Europe and the Middle East. We know about the current situation in the States with inflation. And there's a lot of stress right now that people are going through. And we know that taking care of your health is paramount because that's a way to alleviate stress. I mean, I believe walking on the treadmill, we can get into that in a little bit, and just exercising, getting your heart rate up a little bit, focusing on what you eat, you know, the old phrase, you are what you eat. Doing those little things, it's not massively big changes, I think, that lead to positive result and change. It's making smart little decisions along the way. Are we perfect? No. And I'm using myself as an example to answer your question now. I wasn't always where I'm at now. In my mid-50s especially, I know it's even more important for longevity that I really buckle down and really, okay, I can't fool around anymore. You know, my days of sandbagging or eating or living loosely are over. You know, I don't drink anymore. I know alcohol is very toxic. There is absolutely no nutritional value to alcohol. If you're a person that's trying to shed body fat, alcohol is not your friend. So I started this journey of cutting, and because I was in the high 190s, and I realized for my body type at barely 5'11", and my bone structure, that's too much weight. Mm-hmm. And I got that revelation 2 years ago, and I got down into the 170s, but then I ballooned back up to high 190s after last Thanksgiving, and I was like, okay, so
it's up and down.
I think that everybody that's going through that, you know, trying to get healthy, will go through that. And I've heard it said by fitness influencers that are all PhD subject matter experts have all said, and I agree with it, that it's not linear. Mm-hmm. You're going to have this. But the key is get back on the horse. If you fall down, keep going. Mm-hmm. Don't give up. Just keep at it. Because it really is, at the end of the day, it's a lifestyle.
Yeah.
And it's not just, oh, okay, I'm going from point A to point B. I want to weigh X amount by the wedding. And then after that, you end up putting on more weight than what you first lost. That's the yo-yo. Yeah. And that, so to wrap up the question, March of this past year, I realized that the three variables to knowing that you're tracking, you're progressing, is not just the scale, weigh yourself first thing in the morning on empty stomach every day, but then measurements and then photos. Mm-hmm. And the photo was the one. Yeah. I had my sister take a photo of me, and when I looked at what I looked like, I was utterly disgusted. I'm like, okay, that's it. No more messing around. I am taking this seriously. I know it's a process. I know it's a journey. I know it's a marathon, not a sprint. All of these guys I follow, including Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, it's give yourself time. Give yourself 1 year. Don't like put all this pressure on yourself, because if you're losing rapid amount of weight, chances are you're not only losing water, you're losing muscle. And muscle is the engine that burns fat. Yeah. Muscle is what you need to keep your metabolic rate higher so that you can actually eat more calories. So the journey started in early March. You know, I've dropped almost 30, about, if you count back to when it started in November, but it wasn't as committed as it was in March, but total 30 pounds of body fat.
Wow. So that's impressive.
Crazy.
Yeah. I mean, that takes dedication. That's not by accident, mm-hmm. you know? No. Unless you're neglecting your body and just, you know, not eating or taking care of yourself, maybe you can lose weight. But this was intentional fat loss to stay lean and get lean, which is impressive.
Yeah. I really liked everything you just said. Like, it was very in line with our theme,
our viewpoint,
like our viewpoint of our podcast, which is I liked the part you said about the stress, like keeping that in mind. I mean, we've even talked about if you become too extreme mm-hmm. with your fitness journey or your goals, that can even cause stress. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of even tied into the like fluctuations thing. Like, there are going to be up and downs, and don't be stressed about it.
Yeah.
Like, one day at a time.
One day at a time. Yeah.
So going off of that, did your fitness goals ever become too intense where you felt like there was too much, you were putting too much pressure on yourself?
Yes. I'm just going to give you one perfect example that I got a revelation. The scale. And I think this is an issue that everybody who gets on the fitness journey of wanting to get their best body, wanting to get as lean, wanting to be, you know, aesthetically pleasing to the eye. Of course, we want to look good. You know, let's be real. But we know we don't want to be.
It's a motivator.
You know,
definitely.
Yeah, it is. Now, we know vanity is one of the seven deadly sins, but we also know that you got to have a little bit of vanity, you know, because
it's a motivator.
Yeah. I started getting obsessed with the scale. No doubt.
Okay.
Because there's an app, and you could download the app to your phone. You weigh yourself. It gives you how much water you have. It tells you estimate your body fat, which we know it's way off, because the Tanita scales, the only way you're going to get even somewhat of an accurate measurement, and even the subject matter experts say, the bod pod and underwater weighing and the DEXA scans, even they aren't accurate. And they're as accurate as you're going to get.
Yeah.
So for me, I said, okay, I haven't seen my abs since I was in my early 20s. So I'm like, I'm just going to focus on the visual. So I got so obsessed with the scale, and the scale will go up and down and all around. you know, every day. You know, it could be hormonal. It could be like some days where I hardly any sleep.
Right.
And, you know, and then you have your binging moments, which I've had. I mean, I like cookies and cream and cake and ice cream like everyone else. You know,
water weight,
everything,
tension.
Sodium.
Yes.
All sorts
and it's
of
only
things.
One of the three variables. It's the scale, it's the measurements and the pictures or how you look. So what I realized, like I would be like one day the scale went up 4 pounds. Of course, the day before I know I overconsumed. When you're in a calorie deficit, there's a window of your calories. Well, I know I blew that out of the water. So I was like, okay, but there's no way I put 4 pounds of body fat in one day. I mean, if it takes time to take it off, it takes time to put it back on.
Yeah. Right.
But at the end of the day, I started thinking, man, I'm obsessed with the scale because in that day I upped my cardio. I was like, okay, nope, we're gonna offset this yeah. number. And I'm like, no, that's the wrong mindset. So I was putting pressure on myself to answer your question with the scale's got to keep going down. And that's just not reality. It doesn't just keep going down. You could be doing everything right and the scale could go up 2 pounds in one day.
Right. Yeah.
So, but here's the key. It's average. Everything is average. Weigh yourself every day, same time of day, before you eat anything, over the course of 1 week, divide it by 7. That's your number.
That's your weekly number true. That
yes.
you should track week by week.
And yeah. the same with your calories. If in my cut, I was able to not have to go below 1,900, which is pretty good because I got down to low 160s yeah. at 1,900 calories. And the general premise is no less than 10 times your targeted body weight of calories. So for example, if your goal weight is 160, you should not be eating less than 1,600 calories.
Okay.
Because if you bottom out too low and you plateau, which you will, because you're going to hit a block, then you can't go even lower than that. And then you're not getting the protein. You're not hitting your protein target.
You're missing those.
You're
yeah.
compromising, you know, the nutrition that you need, and it's bad. So the general premise is eat as much calories as you can and do as little cardio as you can to keep the body fat coming off. Because you want to build in margins on both ends so that when you hit a plateau, you have room to go. You have room to come down in the calories and you have room to increase your cardio. So that was something that I learned. That's a little nugget. But yeah, so I was obsessed with the scale. That was the biggest thing for me. And then I said, you know what? I realized what's more important. How are my clothes fitting?
Yep.
You know, I was a 34 waist when I was 197. I have been buying clothes in 32 and it's way too big. I could probably get in a 30, maybe even a 28.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, I've lost a lot here.
That
now,
is impressive.
Now, the fat that's the last to go is the lower abs and the lower back, at least in men. I don't know about women. I think it's kind of the same, but
it's the same for me.
It's the last fat to go. So what I know now, my measurement or the barometer that I use is I'm looking at myself in the mirror. If I can't see my abs, then I know I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm using instead of the scale, even though I will still weigh myself just to kind of track where I'm at. But I was putting so much pressure on myself. Oh my gosh, the scale went up 4 pounds today. This isn't good. Go to the gym.
Yeah. This is so relatable.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, and actually Uncle Ricky, we were talking about this last night, prepping for this episode a bit. I feel like in society, there is such a like emphasis on the scale, mm-hmm. right? And that's just not reflective of other things that are happening in your body. If you're gaining muscle during this period of changing your lifestyle, the weight's going up because muscle weighs more than fat. I think that I definitely fall victim to this, where I would get obsessed with the scale. And it is interesting to hear you say this, because I feel like it's a common thing that plagues women. You don't really hear men talk about how the scale affects them. And I think this is very relatable, that people of all ages, men and women, can and do experience this pressure to get the number to go down, but it's not a good reflection. I see a lot of posts on social media that shows recomps and how I see, you know, obviously more women on my feed, that they'll be maybe 1 or 2 kilograms less body weight or a couple pounds more body weight, but they show 2 pictures and it was over a couple years, right? It doesn't happen overnight, maybe a 2-year period. They look drastically different, but the number of what they weighed barely changed, you know? Their weight didn't change that much when in terms of number, but it's the body recomp.
Yeah.
It's how your body
is
composed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So, I may have missed this. Are you still weighing yourself daily now?
That's an awesome question. So I ended my cut. So my cut technically started where the photos was the catalyst for me to roll up my sleeve and say, okay, this is it. I'm not fooling around up and down, up and down. I mean, I did have up and down. I did have, like I said, it's not linear. I did have probably half a dozen binging moments between March and the end of August. I'll admit, you know, because I'm human. Like I said, I like food just like everybody else. So I'm not going to sit here and let the listeners think this is a health Nazi and he eats perfect all the time. Absolutely not. If I had my druthers, I'd eat cake and ice cream every day.
Yeah.
Okay. And I would dunk cream in my coffee all the time. I'm not going to sit here and say that I don't understand everybody's pain and temptations and, oh, I have to restrict today. I had to do that. But by the grace and mercies of God, he enabled me, empowered me to be consistent. So the listeners need to hear anything. It's about consistency. It's not perfection because there's no perfection in this life. It's consistency. Yeah. So to answer your question, Nick, yes, I'm not right now. So when I went to Florida, I said, praise the Lord, my cut ended on August 24th. I went to Coco for 10 days. Then I went to Miami for 11. Okay. I was eating lots of pastries in the morning in Miami. And, you know, but I did ramp up my cardio. You know, I was averaging 50 minutes a day. I did ramp it up to 90 to even over 100 minutes a day on the incline treadmill, which is what I preach, you know, not holding on. And you work your way up, you know, the incline start at 3% and just continue increasing it, at, you know, like with progressive overload with strength training, yeah. Your body metabolically adapts. So you have to keep challenging it. And you do it by either increasing the speed or the incline, which you manipulate that and track your heart rate. It's zone two training, 65% to 75% of your age predicted max heart rate, which is determined by taking 220 minus your age. And then multiply that number times 0.65 for 65%, times 0.75 to get 75%. And that's your zone two heart range.
Okay,
I try to keep it up high to the 75%. So anyway, so in the 21 days I've been off my cut, I'm in a maintenance mode right now. Okay. I did not weigh myself at all because first of all, the hotel didn't have a scale.
Right.
And neither did the missionary brother who I stayed with in Coco. But what I did was I kept looking at myself in the mirror. Okay. Are my abs disappearing? And it's like, no. I was like, yes. Can I still see vascularity in my arms and still see, you know, because when you lose body fat, you lose it everywhere, not just your abs. And I'm still very vascular. So I'm like, okay, we're tracking here. But I haven't stepped on a scale since the day I left to go to Florida, which was on the 23rd of August. Mm-hmm. So now when I go back to Maryland, yes, I am going to weigh myself. I'm kind of curious to see, okay, did I gain any weight?
Yeah.
And if I did, I'm not going to be alarmed because I basically look the same. My waist is still the same. My clothes fit the same as they did before. But as I continue the maintenance phase, which is throughout September, I am going to get back into weighing myself because I'm going to start my lean bulk in October. And this is when I will increase, you know, they say to put on lean muscle, you need to be in a surplus, but not crazy. So
not dirty bulking.
Yeah. No. I'm not going to undo all this hard work. Okay. So I'm going to start at 5% surplus of what my maintenance calories are and see how I'm tracking there. And if I need to up it to 10, but my body's very sensitive. I've even noticed just the slightest change on the treadmill, the slightest change in the gym. And my body responds. So I know that nutritionally speaking, even if I just up at 50 calories a day, I really believe because my body is sensitive to these minor changes that I don't have to go all drastic.
Yeah.
And I'm not on a timetable. So this is not, I'm not racing against time. I have time, but I want to do it the right way. And my goal is to put on anywhere from 10 to 15 pounds of new lean muscle between now and this time next year.
Wow,
so,
okay.
And I will have to weigh myself, obviously.
Right.
But you hear that, listeners? 10 to 15 pounds of lean muscle between now and this time next year.
So a year.
A year. Like this is long-term sustainable change done in the right way. There is no quick fix when it comes to building lean muscle. So I love that you said that because there's this misconception that everything can be done quickly. Yeah, you can do a lot of things quickly in the wrong way that maybe isn't sustainable. So that's great. We'll have to see your progress, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously I saw you in March and looking at you now, you see the difference. And again, it's through the dedication, which is very inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, there's a phrase, slow and steady wins the race.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If we know that, you know, the story of the tortoise and the hare.
Of course.
And who won the race, right?
Even though the hare.
Yeah.
I had to think about that. I was like, the tortoise.
And everything's about lifestyle. This is, for me, this is going to be a lifestyle that I'm going to take to my grave. Okay. So And like you said, it does not happen overnight. And these influencers that are throwing out videos on YouTube, lose 10 pounds in a week and this and that. Let's be real, okay? If people understand, you're not trying to lose muscle. That's will wreck your metabolism, okay? Because muscle is the engine that burns fat, as I said earlier. You need a metabolism. You want your BMR, basal metabolic rate, to be ramping up. In order to make that number go up, you have to put on muscle. That's the key to increasing your metabolic rate. And with that being said, it is a slow process, and it does take time, and you want to build healthy lifestyle habits that can be used into perpetuity in your whole life. And that's the key to keeping it off, okay? It's not about taking a massive amounts of weight off only to see, you've seen the show The Biggest Loser. Most of those people put it back. And here's the numbers. Numbers don't lie, right? You know, statistics don't lie. You can't refute the numbers. There are 3,500 calories in 1 pound of fat, okay? So for these people out there on YouTube that are telling you, oh, drop 5 pounds in a week or 10 pounds, I'll use 10 for the sake of an even number. You're going to create a 35,000 calorie deficit in 1 week? Impossible.
Oh my gosh. When you put it like that, it's like, yeah, that's not happening.
Right. 10 pounds of body fat times 3,500. How are you going to create a 35,000 calorie deficit in 1 week? And then you're using the two variables of caloric deficit and cardio. Impossible.
Yeah.
You're not even consuming that much.
No.
Yeah.
So that's why they say 1% of your body weight a week, between a half of a percent and 1% of your body weight, is how much body fat you can expect to lose. Not water, not muscle, body fat. And it's sustainable, because if you look at the numbers, let's just use the 1% a week. Okay, well, if there's 3,500 calories in 1 pound of fat, you need to create a 500 calorie deficit a day. And that could be done through dropping your caloric intake and increasing your caloric expenditure through exercise. That's doable.
Right.
Yeah. And it can be sustainable
until
you hit your target. Mm-hmm. And they're even saying as low as 0.5%, which would be 250 calories a day.
Good place to start for some people, you know?
Yeah.
But there's a thing. Now, I want to address one thing really quickly, Victoria, that you said about recomp. Recomp is real. Okay. But here's the thing. I listened to the subject matter experts on recomp. Not everybody's going to go through a recomp. I think there's three categories of people that can recomp. People that are morbidly obese, that just have so much weight to lose and are so deconditioned, they will see the scale obviously come down because they're storing so much energy. That's all body fat is stored energy. And they'll release that, a lot of it, because they have a lot to lose. Those people can recomp. Newbies, you've heard the phrase newbies. People that have never weight trained before, you notice that they start training and all of a sudden, oh my
progress,
God.
Progress like explodes.
It explodes. Yeah. They can recomp, okay? And I'm trying to remember the third category, but people that are seasoned vets that have been weight training for a long, oh, I know that, thank you. If you haven't worked out in 5 years.
Oh.
And you have a history, like let's say for me, for example, I've weight trained pretty consistently since I was 15. But then you take a 5-year hiatus and then you come back.
Boom.
Yes, you can recomp. But people that have been training and training and training, and they're the ones that are going to see the nice slow improvements because the body has already gone through the newbie phase, their recomp is going to be very small because your body is already a seasoned vet. And the recomp is more for people that are like those three categories. Someone obese, someone hasn't trained in 5 years and is deconditioned, and someone that's a newbie. But everybody else, it's two phases. Cut, lean bulk. Cut, lean bulk, rinse and repeat.
Know, because I feel like me personally, I've kind of been in this mindset of body recomp, but that's because I really started working out, I guess at this point, maybe 6 years ago. But I definitely feel like my progress has slowed. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because my body has become accustomed and I need to like switch it up a little bit more intentionally.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what you've been doing, Nick. Like, well, you're in maintenance now, but previously you were kind of cutting, bulking.
I was.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Like, you can only get so big or like build yourself up so much, because it's like your body, the like frame of your body and your bones can only like carry so much.
That's
right. That's why we always say, like, you can't see someone walking down the street, oh, I want to look like them, because your body is different from theirs. So
yeah, you have to find someone relative to you, but even still, you might not look right. exactly
like
them.
There are a lot of factors.
Even if you do exactly what yeah. they do.
And actually, something just came to mind about the recomp thing. This isn't necessarily recomp, but it kind of had to do with like the seeing more progress when you're new, or the person that takes a break for 5 years sees a lot of progress when they restart. You said, Victoria, a couple years ago, you told me you saw some article or something about people who are not newly into working out, but have been working out for a while, doing this cycle where they will do their normal workout and then take a break for 2 weeks and then like restart it. And it was saying something about it was to like reinitiate that progress or something.
I don't remember telling you anything about that. I can't confirm or deny, but Uncle Ricky, literally last night, weren't you telling me about a study that you read that was kind of like 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off about something, mm-hmm. but it had to do with nutrition, right?
Yeah. Let me speak to, first of all, I want to address something Nick said. Very good point. So what he was talking about, your body can only, once you hit the max, so to speak, your body can only hold so much muscle. The phrase is genetic potential.
Yes. Oh, that's what it is.
So yeah. when you hit your genetic potential, which is what I know I haven't yet, and once I know and I got peace in my spirit, I'm at my genetic potential, then all you need to do is maintain it. Then it's just maintenance yeah. the whole way, the rest of my life. I'm at my genetic potential. I maxed out, so to speak. Now I'm just going to maintain yeah. that. But the other thing I want to speak to that people get fooled by, these fitness influencers on Instagram, is, and I just heard this, like you can't compare yourself to other people. The way God made you is the way God made you. All you're trying to do is you're competing with yourself. I want to be the best version of myself that I can be and reach yes. my genetic yeah. potential.
Reach
not me. These other people out there. A lot of these influencers you see, they're all using performance enhancing drugs. A lot of them are using TRT, and there a lot of them are using steroids. Okay. And even some of them, because now we have AI that we could throw into the mix, are actually using old photos of themselves and they're reposting them. And this is me now. And actually they're not looking like that now. I mean, you could do so much trickery on social media. Yeah. And the bottom line is, you know, I have listened to people that talk about getting into single digit body fat. It's not fun. I heard one guy say, you don't need people that go on stage and compete. They don't stay at that level forever. Because when you're under 10% body fat, some people are the exception to the rule. There is a guy that's a certified strength and conditioning specialist. His name is not coming to me right now, but he maintains a level of 6% body fat year round. And he's a former trainer for the New York Mets. Okay. And you could just Google him. I can't remember his name, but he stays. But he's, again, there's a phrase called genetic outlier. If you're a genetic outlier, it means you're in the top half of a 1% of the people in the world. Mm-hmm. You're not normal. You're just genetically blessed by God to carry 6% body fat and it not affect your mood, it not affect your libido. Because people say when you get that low, your libido goes down, you have no energy, you're grouchy and cranky. It's yeah. not sustainable.
Constant hangry.
Yeah. So these guys that are like that, unless they're like this guy I'm referring to, they can't stay at that level. 10% is doable. I think I got down to around 10 when I was in the low 160s. I don't think I'm in the low 160s right now, but I could tell the difference. You know, you're tired and it messes with your hormones. I mean, all of them are saying the healthy, sustainable body fat, and this is for a man, is like between 12 and 15.
Okay.
That's because you can enjoy food. You're not worried about restricting calories and that the game that plays, the psychological things it does to your mind when you're thinking you're restricting. And for women, I think it's probably 18 to 20
yeah.
Is very sustainable and it's not going to be taxing to your psyche and
at
your body.
At the low end.
At the low
yeah.
end.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to speak to that about genetic yeah. potential. Once we hit it, I'm there. I'm just maintaining that. But anyway, I'm sorry. I'm drawing a blank. You asked about last night. So when you're in a cutting phase, there is a meta-analysis, which is the highest. When you hear a study, you want to make sure it's not somebody's opinion. If they can cite the study and it was a meta-analysis. In terms of a cutting phase, they took two groups of people, okay? The one group did a 12 consecutive week of caloric restriction and dieting down. The second group did the same thing, but every 2 weeks, they did what's called a diet break. A diet break is basically defined as eating at maintenance. So for example, if you're consuming 1,900 calories a day to continue to see fat loss and your maintenance is 2,200, when you're in that two-week break, so to speak, that maintenance diet break, you would go back up to maintenance of 2,200 calories. Now, here's what the study showed. The group that did the 2 weeks cutting, 2 weeks diet break, 2 weeks cutting, and kept alternating, at the end of the 26 weeks, they lost more body fat than the group that did the 12 consecutive weeks of cutting.
Interesting. So it took them twice as long, but they saw more results.
Yes.
Okay.
And why was that the case?
They believed it was because of the psyche part. Okay. You know that, okay, I'm only dieting down for 2 weeks, but then I get a 2 week break and you're cycling that. But the key is, and like I said, if you're focused on lifestyle, who cares if it takes 26 weeks? If you're going to get better results and it not be as painful in the process of 12 consecutive weeks of dieting down.
That's a great point.
Yeah. And why could I see that being like a sustainable alternative for people that want to be healthy and make it a lifestyle, but they don't want to be extreme? Well, maybe just do 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off.
Yeah. And especially like, let's say to your point, Uncle Ricky, you do have a goal, but you're not in a rush. We're not doing these quick fixes. I need to lose 20 pounds by the wedding next month. If it's like a more of a, I want to get healthier, I want to lose, you know, body fat in the long run, I do feel like that's a really great way to do it. And I could see the mental benefits of like, okay, 2 weeks, let's crack down, let's go, I got this. 2 weeks, all right, I ease up a little bit, maintenance. And then 2 weeks back, like, I feel like you feel refreshed, you know? And to your point, Nick, if it's a lifestyle thing, well then, it's okay if it takes longer, especially if you're seeing better results.
Yeah.
Sounds awesome.
Well, in terms of the goal too, so I just want to throw out a few nuggets. Like when you start your journey, you should set a target date. Mm-hmm. A lot of these subject matter experts are saying you want to have a target date to reach a goal. Now, of course, your goal can be multiple. You have short-term and long-term, and the long-term is ultimately your lifestyle. But I did set a goal to get my body weight down to 170 by August 1st. And I actually exceeded that. I got down in the 160s by August 1st. But I saw psychologically how that helped me stay on the path. Because see, what I hear a lot of different influencers saying, and I'm going to give you my humble opinion, I believe you need to track calories. 100%. And here's why. A calorie, the definition of a calorie is it's just a unit of energy. That's all it is. It's just energy. And that's why there's no such thing as bad calories and no such thing as good calories in terms of fat loss, because it's all about calories. Now, in terms of nutritional value, sure, there's bad food and there's good food, but I'm just focusing on fat loss. Your body doesn't know, you just ate a nice, well-balanced diet and that's great. Yeah. It doesn't care. If you're in a calorie deficit, that's the key. I mean, I've seen and heard stories of guys that have gotten in their cutting phase and ate all McDonald's and still got there because they weren't exceeding the calories. So
it's a math problem.
Right. It's a total math problem. So I am 100% believer, and people think they get intimidated. I got to track my calories. It's easy. You know, there's an app that I use is fatsecret.com. I plug in what the food is. I weigh it on a scale. And by the way, here's another little nugget. Weigh it in grams, not ounces. It grams is the most accurate. Weight in grams, and I just use my notes app on my Apple phone, and I just track what I'm in for the day and add up the calories. And it's just pretty simple. Because again, think about fueling your car. Okay. Gas is the energy that your engine needs. Do you just sit there and plug it in and just let it fill and let it spill out all over the road? I mean, don't you know your tank can only hold so much gas?
I love that analogy. So, that's good.
So, and it's not hard to track it. And once you do it, it becomes routine. Now, in terms of what are the macros, proteins, carbs, fats, the only macro I track is protein. For me, because I'm older and what I've learned is I try to consume between 180 to 200 grams of protein every day. Every day, even on off days, protein, protein, protein. The carbs and fats will take care of itself. I make sure I get some carbs. Obviously, healthy fats are needed for hormone balance because, again, when you're in a calorie deficit, it messes with your hormones. So the healthy fats, especially for a guy, you know, we need cholesterol for testosterone. So we need healthy fat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's it. I track the calories. And I know there's people out there say, oh, you can lose all this body fat and not track calories. I'm like, yeah, okay. You really know, you know, people in America, especially, we're the second most obese nation on the planet, second now to Mexico, apparently. Mm-hmm. We look at a portion. Our portion sizes in America is like 5.
Wow.
And people think, oh, I only eat 1,500 calories a day. Really? Track that. And then I've heard these fitness subject matter experts say once they tracked it, their 1,500 calories is really 3,000.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
they wonder why they're not getting results.
That, I mean, I've had, even with my experience with tracking, I go through periods where I don't track. I'm at maintenance, whatever. And then I might have like a new goal, right? I think that I know what I'm eating and I usually have a rough idea. But even with my experience with tracking, I'll go back and track what I'm currently eating in a day. I'm always over what I think, especially when you get down to weighing. And you're right, people are intimidated by it. But it, I think I have noticed a huge difference with how I achieve my goals when I track and when I don't. I mean, it's necessary, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking about it now after us talking about it again. And yeah, I feel like everyone should do it to some extent. Like,
to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least.
And just as a sidebar, I'm a big believer in supplements. And again, supplements, it should supplement all the right decisions. It's not the end all be all. You do, it's synergistic. You need to do supplements, but make sure you have all your other P's and Q's taken care of, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, the supplements that have proven scientifically to build lean muscle, creatine, 100%, creatine monohydrate. I'm not on it now, but I'm going to be getting back on it in October. Omega-3 fatty acids have scientifically proven to help with recovery and to build muscle. And then a whey protein isolate or whey protein concentrate. And drink a good protein supplement because it obviously helps when you're having high numbers of your protein target. You know, it could be hard to consume that much food, but you can down a 30 gram of protein shake.
Oh, yeah.
So, but those are the supplements that I 100% believe in because I know they work. And there's so much science supporting creatine monohydrate, not only for muscle building and muscle retention, but also for brain function. They're finding out the cognitive benefits of creatine. And that will put on weight. It automatically puts, I think, about 3 to 5 pounds. But it's cell volumization. It increases because your muscle cells are 70% water already. So, but what you're doing is you're putting water into the cell to expand it. And then it also helps recovery and it helps you be able to push even more weight in the gym. And it also, I can't give you the physiological pathways, but I know it helps with ATP production, which is the powerhouse, the energy. And that's why creatine definitely, and all the PhD subject matter experts I listen to when they talk about supplements will all say creatine monohydrate's number one. Yep.
You've given so much advice during this episode, but is there one more piece of advice that you'd want to tell our listeners?
Don't give up. If you fall down and binge, and I've done it, been there, done that many times. I don't say many, maybe 6 times in the 6 months. But anyway, that's 6 more times than I needed to. And the bottom line is when you do, don't beat yourself up. Know that it's a journey. Know that it's a lifestyle. Be patient with yourself. I want to debunk all the things that you're hearing on social media about how it's a quick fix. No, it's not. Because in order to do it the right way, it's got to become a lifestyle habit. If you just go into this with a quick fix mindset, you're gonna rebound. You're gonna yo-yo diet, and you may get there for a minute. And I've once heard it said, losing fat is not difficult. Losing fat is not the issue. The issue is keeping it off. Yeah. The issue is sustainability. Anybody can go through a diet plan or a nutrition plan and drop tons of weight. And again, I like to qualify what that weight is because it's either water, fat, or muscle. It's got to be fat if you want to look good and you want to be healthy. Anybody can lose it. But here's the key. Can you keep it off?
Yeah.
And most people don't. And it has to be sustainable if it's a lifestyle habit. Mm-hmm. So the key is because we are creatures of habit. By nature, the way we're created, we have habits. Some good, some bad. And this is about forming good habits. Be patient with yourself. Focus on making lifestyle habit changes that's sustainable because you're not going through all this work. I love what Paul, one of the fitness influencers I follow, who's all natural bodybuilder, said. I didn't bust my tail today to go eat like a jerk. I'm not going to eat like a jerk and undo all the work I just did. Not saying you can't have a little bit of fun. You do have to live. I'm not saying we need to be health Nazis here. No, you do need to have fun. I did last night. I had a scoop of vanilla ice cream with chocolate chips sprinkled on top. I had a scoop of coffee ice cream, Reese's Pieces sprinkled on top. Mm-hmm. I ate a chicken cheesesteak with onion rings and high fructose corn syrup ketchup, okay? Which we know high fructose corn syrup is the devil when it comes to putting something in your body. Only a little bit.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm just trying to be lighthearted to let you know, just be patient, stay the course, don't give up, stick with it, and do it the right way. Don't be in a hurry. You're not going to create a 35,000 calorie deficit to lose 10 pounds of fat in 1 week. Yeah. It's not
impossible.
Even possible.
Impossible. Yeah. Well, Uncle Ricky, this has been an amazing episode. I learned so much through our conversation, and I think our listeners are really going to find so much value in this. We'll definitely have to, touch base with you in a year, see how your lean bulk went, the progress. And I just wanted to say thank you again for coming onto the show.
Thank you so much, Victoria. Thank you, Nick, for having me. I'm humbled and honored and grateful to be able to pass on to you and the listeners the things that I've learned. And I learned a lot of new things in the last 2 years. And, you know, I studied health and fitness. So go figure, you know, you can still learn something new every day. So I just want to take this moment to express gratitude for you both. And at God's appointed time, I look forward to coming back.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And as always, DM us on Instagram @MakeTheSwitchPodcast.
Till next time. Bye.